we're going to be looking at this evening, the Gladio project in Italy and elsewhere in Europe. And what we're basically going to be looking at is the use by elements in the United States national security establishment of Nazis, people related to Galen and the Odessa, the use of those people basically to establish fascism, or a proto-fascist and crypto-fascist organization in Italy and elsewhere in Europe, and the use of the anti-communist guys basically to proliferate and perpetuate Nazi and fascist interests in Europe. Recall, as we looked at in the Uncle Sam and the Swastika broadcast, Uncle Sam and Il Duce, the first two Radio Free America shows, we came back to it again in number 10, many of the world's key industrialists and financiers were actively supportive of fascism, both in Germany and elsewhere, because they saw fascism as the antidote to the what they saw as the threat of world socialism. It's questionable whether socialism could ever have dominated the world, but there was that fear on the part of many people at that time. And it is worth noting that although the Nazis were anti-communist, they are also, of course, profoundly anti-democratic, and they were able to use the anti-communist mania and pro-fascist sympathies of many of the world's top industrialists and financiers to further their own independent ends. And we will be looking at the use of anti-communism by SS and fascist elements, people associated with Galen, people descended from Galen, and people involved in our own national security establishment, the use of anti-communism as a means of instituting fascism and terrorism in Europe. Next week, we will come back to the same activities in the United States. We'll take a musical break and then back with the main body of tonight's broadcast. We're now going to jump from the events of the immediate post-World War II period to events that have happened within the last few decades, and events in particular that have come to light in the past couple of months. These are events that we have been speaking about for many, many years here on One Step Beyond. Specifically, I refer listeners to the five-part series that I put together on the shooting of the Pope in May of 1986, specifically Radio Free America shows 17 through 21, which deal with the events in and around the shooting of Pope John Paul II in May of 1981. Now, in May of 1986, we talk about, among other things, and primarily, the P2 Lodge, the Propaganda Douay Lodge, which, to make a long story short, was a Masonic lodge founded by a fellow named Licio Gelli, last name G-E-L-L-I, in 1963. Gelli had been an Oberleutnant in the SS, also, like a lot of SS people, as the Third Reich and fascism were collapsing, I shouldn't say collapsing, really being eclipsed, temporarily turned back, because they've come back with a vengeance in the years since. He also was playing double agent and working with Soviet forces at times as well, and by providing intelligence to both sides during the war, or in the post-war period, the Third Reich and elements of it were basically able to ensure not only their survival, but the ultimate destruction in the Cold War, militarily, but economically and politically, of the Soviet Union, and now, I'm afraid, the United States as well. The P2 Lodge is a major organ of clandestine power, and a Masonic lodge in name only. It's actually a front for crypto-fascist activity, primarily in Italy, but elsewhere as well. The P2 Lodge is a major, major focus of Radio Free America shows 17 through 21. What we're going to be looking at this evening is something called Operation Gladio, basically a CIA-sponsored and P2-related project primarily in Italy, but also elsewhere in Europe. Its name was Gladio in Italy. It was actually in effect elsewhere in Europe, to set up underground military groups, guerrilla groups, which ostensibly were to be used to fight the possible communist takeover of Western Europe, but which, as we will see, have actually served as a base for promoting terrorism and fascism in Italy and elsewhere. Again, I'm going to take a short break here until our static problem is concluded. We're now going to take a look at Operation Gladio and the subsidization and institution, to a certain extent, of fascism in Italy by elements descending from the Galen organization, according to Oglesby, and I think his analysis is right on the money, basically a front not only for the Odessa, but ultimately for its conquest of both the United States and the Soviet Union by pitting them against each other and ultimately bankrupting and corrupting both, practically beyond recognition. A good description of the Operation Gladio project and the CIA's subsidization of and support for fascism in Europe and elsewhere was contained in the San Francisco Examiner, specifically a column by Warren Hinkle in the San Francisco Examiner of, and this, the Examiner of, and this does not have a date, I'll be damned. This These two pages of the Examiner do not contain a date. Perhaps I can find a dateline on one of the articles. No. They're, oddly enough, this particular edition of the Examiner does not have the date on it. Anyway, this was in November of 1988, and the exact date I am unaware of. This page, the ink was eroded off of, so that's why they do not have the date of this particular article. Perhaps I will find this out and then institute it at some subsequent point in the broadcast. In any event, in the San Francisco Examiner from November of 1988, we find the following column by Warren Hinkle. It's headline, CIA Secret Subsidies to Italian Fascists. There are two quotes with which the article, the column, begins. CIA organized secret army in Western Europe, headline Washington Post, November 14th. And then, elements in the U.S. intelligence agencies came to appreciate the importance of the dope trade in financing covert action and paying for arms to equip right-wing paramilitaries. That from a book I've alluded to before, R.T. Naylor's Hot Money from 1987. It's actually, the full title is Hot Money and the Politics of Debt by R.T. Naylor, last name N-A-Y-L-O-R. Hinkle's column, and by the way, this is number 25 in his series called George Bush and the Drug Wars. Hinkle's column reads as follows. Italy is a plentiful background for the Central Intelligence Agency. The spit-and-polish image of the Rome station chief was Duane Dewey Claridge, C-L-A-R-R-I-D-G-E, who in the early 1980s could be found most evenings dressed rather splendidly in cream suits and white shoes, ornamenting the ground floor bar at the Hotel Excelsior, hard by the CIA's offices on Via Veneto. There, Claridge entertained international bankers, Vatican sources, and the Italian parafascists with whom he did agency business. Claridge went on to fame and ignominy as the manager of the agency's secret war against Nicaragua and the CIA counterterrorism chief who helped Ollie North end-run his superiors to deliver missiles to the Ayatollah. Claridge's Italian fascist connections came in handy in the Contra cause, since the first supplier of the Contras was the military dictatorship of Argentina, long a safe haven for Italian war criminals. Although the sorry history of the CIA and its parental predecessor, the OSS, aiding and abetting the escape of Nazis to Latin America in the wake of World War Deuce is well documented, Klaus Barbie got himself right into Bolivia and into the drug trade. Less publicized is American intelligence's protection of Italian fascists, such as the famous Nazi collaborator Prince Giunio Valerio Borghese, also known as Giusto Valerio Borghese, last name B-O-R-G-H-E-S-E. Indeed, the infrastructure of Mussolini's financial, military, and secret police brown shirt machinery survived and flourished virtually intact in post-war Italy under an anti-communist marriage of convenience with American intelligence brokered in 1944 by then OSS, later CIA Svengali, James Angleton. The CIA poured hundreds of millions of American taxpayers' dollars into Italy in the form of secret subsidies to political parties, labor unions, and communications businesses. At the same time, the agency continued its relationship with the most extreme far-right and violent elements in Italian society as a backup for a coup in the event the Italian experiment in parliamentary democracy turned out other than the agency wished. One more time. At the same time, the agency continued its relationship with the most extreme far-right and violent elements in Italian society as a backup for a coup in the event the Italian experiment in parliamentary democracy turned out other than the agency wished. A portion of this sordid story surfaced in Italy 2 weeks ago with the revelation by Prime Minister Giulio Andreotti, first name G-I-U-L-I-O, last name A-N-D-R-E-O-T-T-I, in a speech to the Italian Senate that the CIA in 1951 had organized a secret paramilitary organization well stockpiled with weapons and explosives in Italy that was functioning right into the 90s. Andreotti said that more than 600 people still remain on the payroll of Italy's CIA secret army. The purported reason for this secret army was to rise in the event of a Soviet invasion or a communist takeover of the government. But reports in the Italian press quickly linked the CIA's so-called secret army with the notorious Masonic P2 for Propaganda Due Lodge, one of the rare Masonic organizations the Vatican, which has been deeply involved in this plotting, has allowed Catholics to join, and which has itself been linked to massive financial chicanery, terrorist bombings, and at least two plots to overthrow the Italian government. One of those terrorist activities was the bombing of the Bologna railway station in 1980, in which 85 people died. The same crew was widely suspected to be behind the 1978 kidnapping and assassination of Prime Minister Aldo Moro, whose crime was to let the communists into the Italian government. The code name for Italy's secret army was Operation Gladio, Italian for sword. The Gladio story has remained underreported in the United States, but has been making headlines across Europe as newspapers reveal that similar arms caches and secret armies have been organized under cover of NATO in France, Belgium, the former West Germany, and the Netherlands. The Guardian of London reported last week that the secretive Italian anti-communist army, now suspected of links to terrorist bombings of civilian targets to blame on the left, had trained in Britain. One more time. The Guardian of London reported last week that the secretive Italian anti-communist army, now suspected of links to terrorist bombings of civilian targets to blame on the left, had trained in Britain. The CIA has shown itself willing to get into bed with the most extreme violent rightists to conquer the politics of another, to control the politics of another country. What has not been reported about Operation Gladio is that the Italian fascists employed by the CIA had, during the 1970s, spread out their roots and established a linkage with far rightists in other countries, Korea, Taiwan, and several Latin American nations, that resulted in the creation of a para-fascist international which ran death squads financed by drug profits that the CIA used at arm's length to do its political dirty work. This drug-financed death squad network started operating in earnest in 1975 and 6 when George Bush was director of the CIA. It is possible that in 1976, Bush was kept unaware of the drug connections of the Argentine death squads and of the drug profiteering of the Italian arch-terrorist Stefano Della Chiaia, the E-L-L-E-C-H-I-A-I-E, the mad architect of the Bologna station bombing, who fled Italy to Argentina in 1980 when the Argies began arming the Contras. If George Bush didn't learn these things on his CIA watch, or in 8 years as Ronald Reagan's drug war czar and anti-terrorism chief, if he still has no glimmer of recognition about the revelations of CIA support of far-right-wing paramilitarism that has been spooking Europe the past 2 weeks, then it is no wonder that he is in Saudi Arabia with his head in the sand. Well, all of these activities, as I said, are covered in detail in Radio Free America shows 17 through 21. In particular, number 19 deals with what is known as the strategy of tension. That was put together by Stefano Della Chiaia, a key P2 associate. The strategy of tension, in a nutshell, involves setting up terrorist incidents to be blamed on the left, thereby discrediting the left, and also serving as a pretext for the institution of stringent police state measures in order to combat this particular menace. Basically, provocation. We went into that once again in Radio Free America shows 17 through 21, the series I put together in May of 1986. I'm now going to read another article, this coming from the San Francisco Chronicle, and this one the date is not removed from. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, November 14th of 1990. In the briefing section of the Chronicle, we find this particular article by Patrice Claude from Rome, and Patrice Claude is a writer for the French newspaper Le Monde, and this particular article is headlined, Strange Tale of Terrorism and Sabotage Shakes Italy. Scandal Poses a Threat to the Ruling Coalition. And it reads in part as follows. Italian ministers under American supervision, secret services taking part in and sponsoring terrorist attacks in the Italian peninsula, spooks paid by the state to set off bombs and sabotage trains, 20 years of unexplained acts of violence and terrorism funded in part by the CIA, 3 decades of governmental instability sponsored by NATO in order to ensure that one particular party remained in power in Rome, justice manipulated and the public fed with disinformation over 2 decades. 2 weeks after Prime Minister Giulio Andreotti broke the tight seal of state secrecy and officially acknowledged the existence on national territory of a vast underground network, unquote, unquote, of citizens carefully picked and trained for, quote, sabotage, propaganda, and guerrilla operations, unquote, these are some of the questions taken up by the press that the Italian public are asking. The scandal is of proportions that are potentially even more devastating than the furor over the pseudo-Masonic Lodge, P2, which shook the Republic in the early 1980s. The present ruling coalition is once more in danger of breaking up. Gladio, or Sword, is the code name of an operation designed to resist a foreign occupation, quote-unquote, acknowledged Andreotti in a 10-page report marked Confidential, and submitted 3 weeks ago to a parliamentary committee. The operation was organized by the Italian Secret Service with technical and financial assistance from NATO and the CIA. The Underground Network, quote-unquote, project, which was considered in 1951, provided with a command structure and secret training facilities in 1956, and equipped 7 years later with arms caches located throughout the country, consisted of about 1,000 men and women, and was still in existence, revealed Andreotti. Apparently, only a few Christian Democrat Party grandes, like current Italian President Francesco Cossiga, C-O-S-S-I-G-A, who was Undersecretary of Defense from 1966 to 1969, and who says the fact that it had been possible to keep the operation a secret for 4 decades fills him with admiration, were considered deserving enough of confidence to be kept informed of the project. Who were the gladiators, quote-unquote, then, and who are they now? Have they placed their dangerous expertise in the service of the political struggle against the rise of communism, against the Italian left in general? Was not the 1965 SOLO plan, S-O-L-O, headed by General De Lorenzo, the boss of CIFAR, military intelligence, whose job it was to keep the country destabilized so as to prevent the left from gaining ground? Was not this plan a, quote, carbon copy of Gladio, unquote, unquote, as claimed by Eugenio Scalfari, managing editor of La Repubblica? Did some kind of secret grand organizer of dirty tricks connected with the CIA decide the assassination of Aldo Moro, who had cobbled together a short-lived historic compromise, quote-unquote, between Christian Democrats and communists, and was seized in 1978 by the Red Brigades, which had been infiltrated and manipulated by intelligence service operatives? Was Licio Gelli, former Grand Master of a pseudo-Masonic lodge who had free and easy access everywhere, also financed by the American Secret Service as part of the Gladio operation? Richard Brennecke, a former agent of the Langley, Virginia Company, quote-unquote, claimed 2 weeks ago in the press that the P2 Lodge was a parallel organization of NATO, quote-unquote, and the, quote, CIA provided it with up to $10 million a month for its activities. One more time. Richard Brennecke, a former agent of the Langley, Virginia Company, claimed 2 weeks ago in the press that the P2 Lodge was a parallel organization of NATO, and, quote, the CIA provided it with up to $10 million a month for its activities. Gladio, Solo, P2, the same activities and sometimes the same faces seem to be behind these names. Could the operation also have served as the framework for, and its operatives as the hired guns of, the attempted neo-fascist Operation Compass Card coup d'etat, which was uncovered in 1974, and which led to General Vito Micheli, M-I-C-E-L-I, a known member of the P2 Lodge, losing his job as Supreme Head of Military Intelligence? Incidentally, the monarchist Colonel Amos Spiazzi, S-P-I-A-Z-Z-I, who was arrested in connection with the Compass Card affair, then cleared, rearrested after the murderous terrorist bomb attack at the Bologna station in 1983, that should have been 1980, I suspect, then again released, says that he has been a well-known gladiator for a long time. Again, I think the Bologna bombing that he refers to is the famous bombing of 1980, not 83. By the way, remember Vito Micheli, a name we'll be coming back to later. We're going to be continuing with this article, but it should be noted that all of these activities, again, covered in Radio Free America shows 17 through 21, primarily number 19, which talks about the strategy of tension, also talks about how former SS man Licio Gelli founded the Red Brigades. It's worth noting, too, that what is not mentioned here, but which is covered in detail and at length in Radio Free America 21, is that the evidence linking P2, NATO, CIA, etc. to the shooting of Pope John Paul II is massive, even though that crime has been blamed on the KGB and their Bulgarian associates. Continuing. Incidentally, the monarchist Colonel Amos Spiazzi, who was arrested in connection with the Compass Card affair, then cleared, rearrested after the murderous terrorist bomb attack at the Bologna railway station in 1980, then again released, says that he has been a well-known gladiator, quote-unquote, for a long time. Today, several former gladiators, quote-unquote, and even a few intelligence officers are saying in newspapers that all these things are connected. They claim that, depending on circumstances, gladiators worked hand-in-hand with black or red terrorism, with Colonel Gaddafi's revolutionary intrigues in the West, and even with the Mafia's organized crime, which could sometimes serve their purposes. For most Italian observers, there is hardly any doubt that the gladiators, quote-unquote, controlled from the outset by military intelligence, SISMI and its precursors, CIFAR and SID, had sponsored, manipulated, and even organized many unsolved terrorist attacks between 1969 and 79, that marked the beginning of this troubled period known as the strategy of tension, quote-unquote. Between 1969 and 1980, Italy's so-called leaden years, there were more than 600 terrorist attacks which took 362 lives and injured 172. There were the disturbances of 1968, when Italy emerged from a particularly agitated period of social unrest. The Italian Communist Party was gaining ground. The communists had to be prevented from taking power. For this, people had to be persuaded, if necessary by terror, not to give their votes to the communists. A former gladiator, quote-unquote, speaking anonymously, says, quote, "Depending on circumstances, we'd incite or prevent extreme left or extreme right terrorism, help or avert a strike or an attack on soldiers or policemen." A parallel structure was organized under NATO auspices. That last sentence again, because it's a key. We will be coming back to similar activities in the United States next week. A former gladiator, speaking anonymously, says, quote, "Depending on circumstances, we'd incite or prevent extreme left or extreme right terrorism, help or avert a strike or an attack on soldiers or policemen," quote unquote. A parallel structure was organized under NATO auspices. In the revelations he made in two installments to a parliamentary commission, the first written version sent 48 hours before the second, was apparently abruptly withdrawn 2 weeks ago at the request of the NATO high command. Andriotti, who has been in practically all the Italian government since 1947, says that, quote, "The government is in the process of reviewing all the Gladio arrangements and is furthering in the appropriate allied bodies all initiatives likely to verify the validity of such an underground system for protecting the territory of the state," unquote. Officially, the operation set up, quote, "within the framework of an agreement with NATO," unquote, kept secret until now, was aimed at only one thing, quote, "to organize resistance to a possible enemy, that is, Soviet occupation," unquote. The Italian Prime Minister says that, quote, "secret resistance networks were then set up in Belgium, Holland, and France," unquote. It was France, writes Andriotti, which in 1959 called on Italy to take part in an underground planning committee which functioned within the framework of the Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers Europe, or SHAPE. That last sentence again. It was France, writes Andriotti, which in 1959 called on Italy to take part in an underground planning committee which functioned within the framework of the Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers of Europe, or SHAPE. Well, again, this strategy of setting up terrorist incidents to be blamed on the left in order to discredit the left and basically to institute fascism within Italy, that is the aforementioned strategy of tension covered at great length in Radio Free America 19. We have looked at in the past and will be looking at again similar activities on the part of the American national security establishment both inside and outside of this country. Again, the series on the Pope shooting, 17 through 21, numbers 4, 22, 23, 30, 31, 32, 34, 35, and the miscellaneous two-part archive series dealing with the fascist third position will cover those arrangements for you in detail. I can appreciate that for relatively new listeners, some of this seems quite incredible, that we're going over a lot of information, a lot of which is derivative and built on the foundation of past broadcasts. That's why I recommend the archive shows to those people who find themselves a little befuddled by all of this. Dealing with the setting up of these same guerrilla groups and arms caches and quite possibly proto-fascistic and crypto-fascist organizations in other European countries, we find from the San Francisco Chronicle of the following day, that being Thursday, November 15th of 1990, the following story from the Washington Post, datelined Rome, headline, "New details revealed on secret anti-Soviet brigades in Europe." A paramilitary network, which reportedly received funds from the CIA and NATO, included units in Belgium, France, Greece, West Germany, and the Netherlands, according to European newspaper and news service reports. The existence of a clandestine paramilitary network in Italy, codenamed Operation Gladio, quote-unquote, was disclosed last month in a report by Italian Prime Minister Giulio Andriotti, who repeated the revelation last Thursday in a speech to this nation's Senate. Since then, European officials have described similar operations in most of the other NATO countries and have revealed new details of the operation. The secret army was organized by the CIA during the 1950s for resistance in the event of a Soviet invasion of Western Europe, Andriotti said. He disclosed the covert operation after a Venetian magistrate, Felice Casson, C-A-S-S-O-N, stumbled on its existence during an investigation into a neo-fascist terrorist attack that took place 18 years ago. The investigation revealed that the explosives used in the 1972 car bombing came from one of the 139 secret weapons depots kept for the use of Gladio forces. The bomb, which killed three police officers near the town of Gorizia in northeast Italy, was placed by neo-fascist Vincenzo Vinciguerra, who was sentenced to life imprisonment, the last name V-I-N-C-I-G-U-E-R-R-A. In Washington, the U.S. government official familiar with Operation Gladio said, quote, "If there are allegations that the CIA was involved in terrorist activities in Italy, they are absolute nonsense," unquote. By the way, the Pike Committee here in the United States uncovered hard evidence that not only was the CIA involved in activities of that type, but that the late Michele Sindona of the P2 Lodge was the conduit for many of these funds used to support fascism and terrorism in Italy. Continuing. Andreotti said the United States first approached Italy as early as 1951 when the CIA broached the idea of mounting what it called a, quote, stay-behind organization, one of several in post-war Europe. The American and Italian intelligence agencies worked together, he said, to establish a network of crack military troops, most of them concentrated in the northeast near the Yugoslav border, where the threat of a communist invasion seemed most credible. In 1959, Operation Gladio came under the umbrella of NATO, he said. So obviously, these activities were not by any means restricted to Italy. It should be noted that one of the areas in which the Galen organization, the aforementioned Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit and apparent Odessa Front, fundamentally misled not only the United States, but the Western democracies in general, was about the possibility and intention of a Soviet invasion of Western Europe. This is discussed in excellent fashion by Christopher Simpson in his book Blowback. The simple fact of the matter is that the Soviet Union was very badly damaged during the Second World War. Although they had a huge standing army, they did not have, nor have ever attempted to develop, the logistical support structure to support their army in Western Europe. Beyond that, the notion that Stalin was planning to invade Western Europe was simply an invention of the Galen organization. He never had either the capabilities or the intention. That's not to say the man was a philanthropist, certainly his record is rather clear, but the fact of the matter is there was simply never a possibility of a Soviet invasion of Western Europe. The United States has always been well ahead of the Soviet Union in the arms race. We were the first to get the atomic bomb, the first to get the hydrogen bomb. We were the first to develop an intercontinental bomber fleet to deliver those weapons. We were the first to develop serious ICBMs, MIRVs, multiple independent reentry vehicles. Every major step in the weapons race was initiated by the United States, and we have always been ahead of them. And one of the great myths that has come down to us is that the Soviets either intended to or were even capable of invading Western Europe. They were never capable of it. Maybe they wanted to, but there was never any serious intention to do that. It was simply outside of Soviet capabilities. It's worth noting that as we observe what came from this underground organization, this Operation Gladio, these, quote, anti-communist, unquote, guerrillas, who in fact were anti-democratic and pro-fascist, and never lose sight of Licio Gelli and the Propaganda Douay Lodge, either his activities, which we will be covering at considerable length, or the fact that Licio Gelli himself was a member of the SS, an Oberleutnant in the SS. It should be noted that Operation Gladio was basically, although operating under the guise of anti-communism, was a fascist operation. Reading now from the Village Voice of December 11th of 1990, and Doug Ireland's Press Clips column, research credit on this, by the way, goes to John Whalen of the San Jose Metro, a worthwhile publication I recommend to listeners. A section of Ireland's column here called In Gladio Veritas reads, "We're still waiting stateside for our major newspapers to decide that the Gladio affair, press clips of November 20th and 27th, demands some aggressive reporting. Meanwhile, in L'Evénement du Jeudi for November 22nd through 28th, the influential French centrist weekly's longtime intelligence expert Pascal Krop, K-R-O-P, quotes Licio Gelli, the former grandmaster of the shadowy Masonic Lodge P2, as saying that Italy's Gladio network was recruited, quote, from the veterans of the Salo Republic, Mussolini's puppet government in the last days of World War II. The last sentence again. Licio Gelli, the former grandmaster of the shadowy Masonic Pascal Krupp quotes Licio Gelli, the former Grand Master of the shadowy Masonic Lodge P2, as saying that Italy's Gladio network was recruited, quote, from the veterans of the Salo Republic, Mussolini's puppet government in the last days of World War II, unquote. Well, indeed, we will be looking at how the CIA and Licio Gelli, a former SS man and P2, have used this, quote, anti-communism as a vehicle for instituting fascism and pro-fascist activities. And again, bear in mind the Galen organization, as a front for the SS Underground, part of that SS Underground, Licio Gelli, whose activities in conjunction with a lot of key American officials, well-known names, names not generally associated with fascism, but in fact associated with just exactly that. We're going to be coming back to those, and we're going to be confirming many of the questions asked in that article by Patrice Claude that was in the briefing section of the Chronicle. A musical break, and then more of tonight's One Step Beyond broadcast. Well, we're going to return now to tonight's archive show. We're talking about Operation Gladio, which was a CIA and NATO-sponsored, ostensibly anti-communist guerrilla contingency group, but which in fact, as we are about to see and as we have already seen foreshadowed, really served as a vehicle for the institution of crypto-fascist and terrorist activities in Italy. The aforementioned strategy of tension, put together and formulated by the P2-connected Stefano Della Chiaia, was basically a program to destabilize Italy and drive it to the right by setting up terrorist incidents to be blamed on the left in order to not only discredit the left, but to serve as the pretext for the institution of massive police state tactics as well. We're going to now take a look at just exactly how the P2 Lodge, and remember that its Grand Master, Licio Gelli, connected with, among others, not only the SS, but also Presidents Nixon, President Reagan, current President George Bush, and a whole lot of other people, an individual who wields tremendous influence within the Republican Party and the U.S. National Security Establishment, a man who was an honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration in 1980. Licio Gelli, a former Oberleutnant in the SS, and we're going to take a look now at the people involved in promoting Operation Gladio, the people involved in instituting the activities we've been looking at, and we will basically be looking, as I indicated at the beginning of the broadcast, at the legacy of the Odessa, at how the anti-communism of the CIA and the P2 was used to institute fascism in Italy. We've got our static back here. I'm going to take a short break here while we wait for this to clear up. We will now proceed with our examination of exactly how Operation Gladio was used to destabilize Italy and this anti-communist vehicle, quote-unquote, using the P2 Lodge and in turn the P2 Lodge serving as a vehicle for the CIA and NATO. We will see how this anti-communist vehicle was in fact used as a vehicle for promoting fascism and political reaction. A very, very important article comes to us courtesy of Dave, who has done so many of our Italian translations. Our Italian translator is Dave, and this is a very, very important article talking about the institution of Operation Gladio. It is from L'Espresso of November 25th of 1990, and some of the key names here are Theodore Shackley, a key former CIA operative, an individual whose name was came up in a prominent context in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal. He is one of the key defendants in the Christic Institute suit, and he also is an individual who apparently, according to this article at any rate, precipitated the institution of Licio Gelli's contact with, among others, Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger, and had a lot to do with instituting, Theodore Shackley, Haig, and Kissinger, that is, with instituting the pro-fascist and terrorist activities of Operation Gladio. Again, this comes from L'Espresso of November 25th of 1990, courtesy of Dave, who did both the research and the translation of this article, and it reads as follows. From the moment Gladio became a structure in the direct employ of the Secret Services, it's been important to understand who was at the apex of the services, what role Licio Gelli played, and what contacts he had both with our services and the CIA. To simplify everything and close this chapter once and for all, we need to publish the text of Informational Report Number 446R, which the CISMI sent on April 16, 1983, to the investigating magistrate of Trent, Carlo Palermo. Interrupting, Carlo Palermo, of course, was the magistrate involved with investigating Stibom, the arms for drugs ring connected to P2, CIA, NATO, and last but most assuredly not least, the attempted assassination of Pope John Paul II. It's worth noting that CISMI is Italian military intelligence, one of their services. Beginning again. To simplify everything and close this chapter once and for all, we need to publish the text of Informational Report Number 446R, which the CISMI sent on April 16, 1983, to the investigating magistrate of Trent, Carlo Palermo. The CISMI wrote, quote, "It was Ted Shackley, director of all CIA secret activities in Italy in the 70s, who presented Alexander Haig to the head of the P2 Masonic Lodge. it was with the authorization of Haig and Kissinger that Gelli recruited 400 high Italian and NATO officials into his lodge in the fall of 1969, quote unquote. Last sentence again, because it's very important. Last two, actually. It was Ted Shackley, director of all CIA secret activities in Italy in the 70s, who presented Alexander Haig to the head of the P2 Masonic Lodge. It was with the authorization of Haig and Kissinger that Gelli recruited 400 high Italian and NATO officials into his lodge in the fall of 1969, unquote. It seemed like an insoluble problem. Gelli acted as the hinge between the American services and the Italian armed forces in the fall of 1969, a period that ended in the Piazza Fontana massacre. Fascist and Republican, Gelli in 1943 participated in the rounding up of partisans and allied soldiers in the district of Pistoia, P-I-S-T-O-I-A. Afterwards, he became a double agent, performing actions with the partisans and then informing against them. They were days of great confusion, but Gelli managed to save his skin and to be enlisted in the Counterintelligence Corps, CIC, in the retinue of the Fifth Army. And when, in subsequent years, all the names of the agents that the Americans used during the war were taken out of the archives, Gelli's name appeared among them. It's not for nothing that Gelli was at the center of a long cover-up, quote-unquote, campaign, which even led to his being branded, quote, the most dangerous agent of the Comintern, unquote. By the way, remember Gelli's work for CIC? Remember Haig and Kissinger, and an individual not mentioned here, a fellow named Fritz Kramer, for many years the plans officer of the United States Army? We're going to be coming back to some of those relationships and some of the ghosts and activities of the Odessa when I analyze this article. Continuing. Gelli joined Masonry in 1965, a year after the unsuccessful coup of General Giovanni Di Lorenzo. That, by the way, was the aforementioned solo plan mentioned in that article by Patrice Claude from the Chronicle briefing section. Beginning again. Gelli joined Masonry in 1965, a year after the unsuccessful coup of General Giovanni Di Lorenzo. In a few years, Gelli was elevated to the position of Grand Master and was able to manage by himself a covered lodge, quote-unquote, the Propaganda Due. American Masonry and the CIA exercised total influence and control over the brothers, quote-unquote, of Palazzo Giustiniani. One more time. American Masonry and the CIA exercised total influence and control over the brothers, quote-unquote, of Palazzo Giustiniani. It was Frank Gigliotti, G-I-G-L-I-O-T-T-I, former agent of the military secret services in Italy and then the CIA, who agreed with the Grande Oriente d'Italia in 1960 to finance it. In 1952, there was a signature by General De Lorenzo in support of the demagnetized plan, quote-unquote, which provided for, again quoting, reducing the strength of the communist parties by any means, unquote. And William Colby, the head of the CIA, made it clear that it was, quote, to prevent Italy from falling into the hands of the PCI. I would interrupt here. 1952 was the signature by General De Lorenzo. William Colby, of course, made that comment many years later. He didn't become head of the CIA till the early 70s. Continuing, this is the panorama in which Gelli began to operate. Tight links with the Americans and tireless opposition to communism. It's not for nothing that he also participated in the summit organized inside the U.S. Embassy in 1976 on the eve of the elections, in which many feared the PCI would dominate. Arrigo Molinari, M-O-L-I-N-A-R-I, the chief of police in Nuoro, N-U-O-R-O, and a member of the P2, declared, quote, "The meeting occurred for the purpose of stopping the growth of the communists. The solution they proposed was one of taking possession of the press. The representatives of the multinationals paid remarkable sums, which ended up in the pockets of Gelli and the Secret Services." The relations of Gelli with the Secret Services are illuminated by a circular addressed to all the brothers, quote-unquote. And again, quoting, "If you are interested in receiving fuller and more detailed information about our institution, you may telephone 475-9347 in Rome, where a person will provide you with any further explanations," unquote. The holder of the number shown on the circular corresponded to a defense ministry group in Piazza Barberini, B-A-R-B-E-R-I-N-I. In short, for a long time, the secretary of the P2 Lodge remained inside the premises of the military secret service, the apexes of the P2 and the CISMI being the same then. One more time. In short, For a long time, the secretary of the P2 Lodge remained inside the premises of the Military Secret Service, the apexes of the P2 and the SEASME being the same then. Vito Micheli, M-I-C-E-L-I, head of the Secret Service from 1970 to 74, was appointed thanks to the good graces of Jelly with Bruno Palmiotti, P-A-L-M-I-O-T-T-I, and the brother of the minister Tanasi, T-A-N-A-S-S-I, both P2 members. Other men of Jelly were the general Giandalio Maletti, M-A-L-E-T-T-I, who together with Giulio Andriotti propitiated Micheli's dismissal, Federico D'Umberto D'Amato and Giovanni Fanelli, F-A-N-E-L-L-I, managers of the Interior Ministry's Reserved Affairs Office, and the top of the Reformed Services in 1977. That is to say, the head of the SEASME, Giuseppe Santavito, the head of the SISDE, Giulio Grassini, and the head of the CESIS, C-E-S-I-S, the connecting body, the prefect Walter Pelosi. Those names are spelled Santavito, a man, key P2 member we've spoken about in the past, and we'll come back to, S-A-N-T-O-V-I-T-O, Grassini, G-R-A-S-S-I-N-I, and Pelosi is P-E-L-O-S-I. Continuing. Enrolled in the lodge were 52 officials from the Carabinieri, 50 from the Army, 37 from the Guardia di Finanza, and 29 from the Navy. No fewer than 92 officials occupied the position of colonel or general. The judges occupied with the Bologna massacre wrote, quote, Jelly's attention to military circles took on a concatenation, one specifically dedicated to the narrow elite of officials who successfully commanded the various security services. The report of the Commission of Inquiry reached two interesting conclusions. Jelly is a member of the services and is the apex. The P2 Lodge and Jelly are expressions of an influence that American Masonry and the CIA have exerted on Palazzo Giustiniani since its reopening after the war. I would add that the CIA has influenced the P2 Lodge. It should be noted that although there are certain Masonic lodges that are used not only in Italy but elsewhere as fronts for various kinds of political activity, one should not make the mistake of confusing the Masons as a whole with these activities. Most Masonic lodges are just exactly what they represent themselves as being. They're fraternal organizations, but some of them, because of the close-knit and relatively secretive nature, can be used for various political activities. The P2 Lodge represents an abuse of Freemasonry, but there are strong contacts between American and Italian Freemasons independent of these activities. Continuing. Well, let me repeat the last sentence because it's an important one. The report of the Commission of Inquiry reached two interesting conclusions. Jelly is a member of the services and is the apex. The P2 Lodge and Jelly are expressions of an influence that American Masonry and the CIA have exerted on Palazzo Giustiniani since its reopening after the war, unquote. What did the godfathers of Gladio, namely the Americans, want? It's written in an extremely clear style in a secret document from the General Commander of the United States Forces and directed to the CFAR. Quote, it's necessary to reduce the strength of the Communist parties, their influence in the government, and in particular in the trade unions, in such a way as to most reduce the danger that communism might settle in Italy, damaging the interests of the USA. The limitation of the power of the communists is a priority objective. It must be achieved by any means. Last two sentences. It's necessary to reduce the strength of the communist parties, their influence in the government, and in particular the trade unions, in such a way as to most reduce the danger that communism might settle in Italy, damaging the interests of the USA. The limitation of the power of the communists is a priority objective. It must be achieved by any means. Continuing, how then does one evaluate the fact that the head of the CIA in Italy, Rudolph Sic Randolph Stone, became a member of the P2? And the circumstance that the lists of the secret lodge were kept in the Pentagon, and the assertion by the former agent Richard Brennecke that the CIA paid the P2 at least $100 million, and the membership of Henry Arsan, A-R-S-A-N, the great arms and drugs trafficker, in an Italian task force, quote-unquote, run by the United States services. These are questions that could be settled with the public diffusion of the list of all the gladiators.